We start with, thank you. We start with a number of questions that span a good portion of the Sedra. We'll give one way of understanding them all. Okay. Firstly, there's a Rashi very close to the beginning of the Sedra. Very famous Rashi, but on the surface it seems to go against the entire foundation of what Yiddishkeit is all about in Torah. It says that Vayisrotzitzu Habanim Bekirba, that the twins were struggling within her. And Rashi brings down a Chazal, whenever she passed by a place of Avodah Zorah, Esav wanted to go out. And whenever she passed by a place of Torah, Yaakov wanted to go out. Okay. It seems to imply that Yaakov and Esav were predestined to be one righteous and one wicked, and that is against the entire foundation of the Torah. Because if you're predestined to be a tzaddik or a rasha, and there's no free choice, then there can't be reward, punishment, there can't be an olam haba, the whole Torah doesn't make sense. So that's one problem. There's another problem. Lesser problem, but there was an argument between two great people, Rebbe and Antoninus. Rebbe was Rebbe Yudah Nasi, and Antoninus was a Roman Caesar. Some identify him with the Anthony of Antony and Cleopatra. And he was a tzaddik, Antoninus. He used to learn Torah with Rebbe. And they had a lot of arguments. One of the arguments they had was, when does the Yetzer Hara begin to be affected by a person? Rebbe held from conception. Well, right at conception, a person has the Yetzer Hara. And Antoninus held from birth, not from conception. And Antoninus brought a proof to his side, which in the end, Rebbe agreed that he was right. Because it says, L'pesa chatas rovets. The chatas, the sin, lies at the opening, meaning after a person's born. So if there's no Yetzer Hara before you're born, how in the world was Esav trying to go out and serve Avodah Zorah? Totally negates that position. You see that he did have a Yetzer Hara before he was born. Next, Rashi says that when they were born, they both went to school, came home from school, nobody paid attention, and they didn't notice the differences between them until they became 13, and then Esav went out to the fields to hunt, and Yaakov went to the Beis Medrash to learn, and then people started to take notice. If they were so different in the womb, right, what all of a sudden changed them when they came out, and all of a sudden there's no difference? And then just at their bar mitzvah, all of a sudden they change again. It's not normal, not natural. Okay. Okay, so now it's least obvious that they have two children. One is more, likes to be a hunter, and the other one likes to sit and learn Torah. And Yitzchak chooses to prefer the one that goes out and hunts, not the one who sits and learns Torah. Okay. And so you could say, well, okay, maybe Yitzchak didn't recognize Esav's bad qualities. Okay. And maybe he didn't have bad qualities. He just was a hunter, but he sat in the forest and learned Torah also, whatever. But the Gemara says that when he was 15, he came home tired from committing three major sins. Gilui Arayos, immorality. Shvichas Damim, he murdered somebody. And Avodah Zorah, and he served idolatry. And Avraham Avinu had to die not to see this, right? That would have ruined his life to see his grandson go out, L'tarbus Ra, so he died 5 years earlier. So it was pretty obvious that Esav was not just, you know, a nice hunter, but he's really a terrible teenager. 15.
Because
he was supposed to live 5 years longer, but this is when Esav went out to Tarbus Ra, 5 years before Avraham was supposed to die. All right. In any case, so why didn't Yitzchak recognize that? Avraham had to die, obviously it was noticeable. Yitzchak Avinu, so you say, oh, he's blind, he was in the house, you know, that's Yitzchak Avinu, right? Very hard to say that Yitzchak Avinu was so naive or so unaware of what was going on around him.
Right?
Yeah, even with all of that, still, couldn't notice what Avraham Avinu had to die because it wasn't noticed. Okay, and to make the question even stronger, we see that Yitzchok did notice the difference between his children. Because when Yaakov came in impersonating Esav, he slipped up twice, that gave Yitzchok the feeling this is not Esav. First time, he asked him, how'd you come back so quickly? He said, Ki hikra Hashem Elokech, he mentioned God's name. And Yitzchok said, Esav never mentions God's name. So this can't be Esav. Now, here you know I have a son who never mentioned God's name. Second thing he slipped up, he said, please, Yakum Na'avi, please get up. He said, I never heard Esav say please or thank you in my life. So here's their father. He knows he has a son who's not polite, doesn't say please and thank you, doesn't mention God's name, and this is the one he wants to give the bracha to, over the son who sits and learns Torah. Okay, so obviously Rivka did notice, right? And therefore she had Yaakov go to pretend he was Esav to get the brachas that she felt Esav didn't deserve. Why don't you just go to tell her husband? Why don't you have to make this whole subterfuge? Why don't you go tell him? Right? I think you don't read the situation properly. Right? And even though there are Rishonim who say that she felt intimidated from Yitzchok, who was a scary guy. But in the end of the parasha, she knew how to talk up very nicely. She said, if Yaakov marries one of the girls around here, I don't need to live, get him out of here. And she told Yitzchok exactly how she felt and what she wanted him to do. Why couldn't she do it earlier? So in order to answer all these questions and to give I'm going to say something that eventually, that in the past I've said that I don't have any real source for this, just a very small indirect source. Yesterday I found a medrash that says exactly what I said. Exactly. So for years I've been saying it, now the medrash says it. In any case, let's start with something else though first. There's two Rambams that you have to understand in order to understand this parsha. I'm going to not quote them word for word because it's going to take too much time. So I will give you the gist of what the Rambam says. These are both Rambams and they're both in the same sefer. They're not even a different book. Same author, same sefer, different places. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says the following. Everybody has free choice in this world to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu or a rasha like Yeravam ben Nevat. You can't be a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu, you can be a tzaddik like. And don't even entertain the thought, says the Rambam, like foolish goyim say or unpolished Jews, that people are predestined to be a tzaddik or a rasha. It's not true. A person can choose his way in all the different midos that a person has. He can be as cruel as he wants to be, or as merciful. He can be stingy or generous, and so on. With all the other character traits, a person chooses what he wants. And, says the Rambam, nothing pushes him to either side. Nothing decrees on him. Nothing is decreed on him before he's born. It's all up to a person's free choice. That is the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam in Hilchos Deyah says the following. People in this world have various different characters. To the extreme. Some people are very merciful. Some people are very cruel. Some people are very stingy. Some people are very, generous. Okay, same exact midos that he mentioned in the other place. And then the Rambam says, and it's not only the extremes, but there's a million gradations in between. Some people are somewhat generous, somewhat cruel, and so on. He says, and where do these character traits come from? She says, some of them are part of his makeup from the time that he is created. So they're determined. Some of them are not part of his original makeup, but he has a greater proclivity, greater predisposition to them. In other words, something pushes him towards that side. And some of them, he says, are not part of his makeup, predetermined, but they're things that the person learns from other people. And some of them he chooses on his own. So the Rambam says, what you're not allowed to think, he says openly. that people's, they say exact midos, same things. There's another problem with the first Rambam. The Rambam says a list of things that depend on your free choice. One of them, he says, is whether you're going to be smart or foolish. So that's also not decreed. Yet the Gemara says not like that. The Gemara says when a person's conceived, a malach comes and presents that first blastula, which is the beginning embryo, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Doesn't mean that he takes it out of the mother, and means, figuratively speaking, presents it and says, what's going to be with this emerging child? Is he going to be strong or weak? Handsome or ugly? Rich or poor? Smart or dull? One thing is not mentioned. Is he going to be a tzaddik or a rasha? That's not decreed. But smart or dull is decreed. And the Rambam says it's not decreed. That's part of the things that aren't decreed. So the Rambam both contradicts himself, and he also contradicts the Gemara. The answer is that there's absolutely no contradiction between these two. Rambams are talking about two completely different things. The Rambam in Hilchos Deis is talking about character traits. Okay, it is clear that people are not born without any character and have to develop their character. Right? That's not the case. People are born with definite characters. There are children that from the day they are born are more fidgety and easily upset. Right, any little thing already they're crying and they're whatever. And other children that are cool, calm, collected, you can throw them across the room and they don't whimper. If you throw them too much across the room, they won't whimper ever. But in any case, you have kids that are what's it called? Little kids. They didn't work on their midos and acquire midos. They go to nursery school, right, and they come home missing their jacket, missing their lunch, missing their shoes. They gave it out to all the other children. And some kids come home with everybody else's shoes and jacket and food. Right? Some kids are right, generous, and some kids are stingy. Right? It's clear, right, that people have a character. Right. That is definitely, in many areas, predetermined. Character traits are either part of what a person's makeup is, or things that he has a greater proclivity, right, disposition to, and some things he learns from others, some things he develops on himself. That's clear. That's the way the world is. That has nothing to do with being righteous or wicked, because character traits are parif. No character trait is good or bad. It depends on the situation. Example. Imagine walking down the street and a terrorist who just murdered 200 people in cold blood trips at your feet. You're walking with a friend and you're both going to baseball practice. You have a baseball bat in your hand. Okay. The terrorist looks up at you and says, could you help me up? I really need to go kill 200 more people in cold blood. Okay. You have the baseball bat in your hand. Now, you have a choice. You can bat that person's brains in, so he'll never kill another person in cold blood. Or you can help him up. Okay. I am... my predisposition is to be very merciful. And your predisposition is to be cruel. When you were a kid, you used to pull the wings off of flies or whatever and enjoy to see, you know, what happened. Right? You just love the sight of blood. And I, what's it called, get squeamish. I faint at the sight of blood, and I'm very, very squeamish and merciful. In this situation, unless you belong to the ACLU, what would be the proper behavior, right, to do with this terrorist? Beat his brains in with your baseball bat. No shy. Okay? Who's going to have an easier time doing that? Doing what's right? Me or you? You. Because you have a predisposition to be cruel. This is great for you, right? You have a chance now to beat somebody's brains out. Me, it's going to be very hard for me to beat somebody's brains out. But if I have to do it, and it's the right thing to do, I'll have to overpower my nature and go against my nature and kill that person. Okay. We go walking by. Now we, right, this terrorist is out of this world. We're walking down. 2 blocks later, a little old lady falls at our feet. Okay, now what's the proper behavior? Batter in her brains with your baseball bats or help her up, right?
And I'm going to touch her.
Right, most people would understand that you pick her up. So I'm going to have an easy time doing that because I'm merciful. You're going to have a harder time doing that because you are inclined towards cruelty. But you're going to have to overpower your nature to do what's right at that time. So the nature doesn't make you a tzaddik or a rasha. It depends on the circumstance. There are circumstances when being cruel is the proper behavior, and if you'll be cruel, you'll be a tzaddik. Shaul HaMelech, right, had mercy on the wrong people. For that he was punished. And what's it called? Therefore, the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuva says, no one forces you or pushes you to use your midos in a positive or negative way. That's totally up to you. Right? The only problem is that it's not really, and therefore, one more thing. There's two kinds of wisdom. There is IQ. That's part of the makeup of a person. That's like character traits. You're born with a certain brain power, right? That's not something that's part of your free choice, right? You're born with, if you have an IQ of 35, you're not going to be Albert Einstein. And if you have an IQ of 135, you're not going to be Dalton. That's not within your free choice. You're born with, some people are born smarter, some people dumber. But what kind of IQ you have does not make you a tzaddik or a rasha. You can be a very, very smart rasha and a very, very dull tzaddik. Right? A person can act foolishly or wisely. That has nothing to do with being smart or dull. So the Rambam says, whether you're wise or foolish is part of being a tzaddik or a rasha. Acting wisely or acting foolishly. And that doesn't depend on your IQ. On the other hand, the Gemara says your IQ is determined by predetermination. You can increase it a little bit, decrease it a little bit, but basically, that's what you're going to be. But how you're going to use it, that's a different story completely. That's not decreed. The only thing is, it's not fair. Right? Because, you can use any meter for the good or the bad, but let's be honest, most of the time, if you have a nature of being merciful, that's going to be the positive behavior. And only a very, usually you don't have terrorists falling at your feet where you have to batter their brains in with a bat. Most situations in life, being merciful is better than being cruel. So if I have a nature to be merciful and you have a nature to be cruel, I have a better chance of being a tzaddik because I can use my nature 90% of the time and only suppress it 10% of the time, where you have to use your nature only 10% of the time and suppress it 90% of the time. So the chor is not fair. The answer is, if we'd only have one character trait, then taka, that you got the character trait that's more usable as negative than positive, then you got the raw end of the deal. But we're all made up of many character traits. So it balances out. I may have a predisposition to be merciful, but I'm also stingy. In that midah, stinginess is the 10% good time and 90% bad. You happen to be generous. You're cruel, but you're generous. So it evens out. Everybody has certain midahs that are more easy to use for the good and certain that are more easy to use for the bad. You have to suppress them or use them accordingly.
Isn't suppression in itself also a strong character trait? If you have to suppress it...
Yeah, but that's something, that's something that a person can develop.
So that in itself also builds your spirit?
Yeah, okay. We're going to get to that. Oh, that's what you said, I didn't realize what I'm going to say right now in different words. It's very good. Let's hold the questions till finish this, because I want to finish the whole thing and we don't have that much time. It's still not 100% fair, because we all know people who have a majority of good character traits as opposed to bad, or the opposite, bad character traits. So it doesn't always even out. Second thing that evens the playing field, HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands your handicap and he rewards you and punishes you accordingly, meaning the following. Let's say I'm easily, by nature, easily angered. and you're cool, calm, and collected by nature. And somebody comes and steps on both of our toes at the same time, and we both go berserk. We lose it. Who's going to get punished more for losing their temper? Right? You. Because you went against your nature to lose your temper. By me, that's part of my nature. God understands that that's what I am. Right? So he's going to punish me less for losing my temper because I have greater predisposition. Who's going to get more reward if we control our temper? Me. It's harder for me to control my temper than you. So it evens out in that respect of reward and punishment. Third thing. God gives you situations in life that fit your character. That's what's normally said. A person doesn't get a test that he can't pass. Only in school do teachers give tests you can't pass. But God gives people situations in life that fit their character. The Rav Avraham brings the situations in life to people, and he usually brings them in such a way, and if he knows that you can't handle it, then you're not responsible for that. But that's God's business. It's not our business. Okay. In any case, so that is what evens it out. Now, with this information, let's go back to Yaakov and Esav. The Rashi that says that Yaakov and Esav, from the womb, were really different children, it's true. Yaakov had his personality, Esav had his personality. And I always said that it was possible, and I had no proof to this, I'm going to read you a medrash that says exactly what I'm going to tell you, that Yitzchak Avinu, the medrash says, could have had 12 tribes. It didn't work out like that. Just like Yaakov had 12 tribes. And they were different. Each one had a different purpose or whatever, and because they had different purpose, they had different character traits to fit their mission in this world. Each tribe was different. So conceivably, Yitzchak already could have had different tribes. And even though there's a chazal that says that God told Avram, ki bi Yitzchak yikar l'zera, in Yitzchak, but not all of Yitzchak, that didn't passel Yaakov or Esav. Both of them could have been, there could have been other children. Just not all of Yitzchak's children would be the progenitors of the Jewish people. But that didn't disqualify anybody per se. So could be that had both Yaakov and Esav chosen to use their character traits for the good, they both could have been tzaddikim, or they both could have been rishoyim, and both disqualified. That was up to their free choice. But it wasn't up to their free choice what character traits they had. And I always, by conjecture, said the following. Klal Yisrael needs two kinds of leaders. A melech and a kohen. They're completely different kinds of people. Right? The traits of one are what a melech has to do. A melech has to be strong, has to do war, make wars, has to bring justice, has to be a more cruel kind of physically inclined person. A kohen is more of a spiritual leader, right? Less physical, less material, right? In the spiritual realm, not involved in the physical realm. So I would just say that it could be that Yaakov was meant, he had the character traits of a Kohen, and Esav had the character traits of a king. And the only proof I had to that is the Chazal say there was another human being in history who had the exact same character traits of Esav, David HaMelech. But except he used his character traits for the good. So that was the extent of the proof I had to this idea. Now let me read you a medrash. The medrash says, V'yakov k'siva yigdalu ha'na'orim hare Yaakov ve'esav k'shem shechol ha'shem al Yaakov kacho yoroi sheyochol al Esav. Just like God's presence descended on Yaakov, it could have descended on Esav too. Esav ha'yoroi sheyikor Yaakov, Esav could have been Yaakov. V'yakov ha'yoroi sheyikor Esav, and Yaakov could have been an Esav. They could have switched roles and one been a tzaddik and the other one been the Rasha. Esav ha'yoroi lahamid malachim. Esav was more ready to bring out kings. The Yaakov ha'yoroi lahamid kohanim. Habrachos harishonos, therefore the first brachos, which were physical brachos, and brachos of authority and dominion, were Esav's brachos. The second brachos were spiritual brachos. They were Yaakov's brachos. Right? And so on. And Leah would have been for Esav, and Rachel would have been for Yaakov. Okay, exactly what I've been saying for years, and by accident I was preparing for a drosha for the Shabbos, and found this Medrash, couldn't believe that it actually says that. In any case, so the Medrash says that, meaning the following, that it never says, according to I've looked everywhere. If you find a Medrash that says differently, then I have a problem. But I've looked, and no Medrash, no Mefarish says that Esav wanted to go out and serve idolatry, or Yaakov wanted to go out and learn Torah. It just says whenever she passed by a place of idolatry, Esav wanted to go out. And whenever she passed a place of Torah, Yaakov didn't want to go out. Their behavior wasn't yet determined when there was a call, but what they were attracted to. Esav, having the character traits of a king, was attracted to the more physical places in the world. That's what kings have to be involved in. The physical, material world, they set up the infrastructure. And then the Kohanim add the spirituality. It's a symbiotic relationship, or it's a dual relationship. So where's the most physical place in the world? A place where they take spiritual things and make it physical. Avodah Zarah. So Esav was attracted like a magnet to those places. That doesn't mean he's going to be a Rasha. You can be attracted to physical places and use them properly. Right? For instance, it's the Sifsei Kohen Ala Torah says that whenever Rivka passed by a place of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out. He asked a very simple question. What was Rivka doing there? What was Rivka passing by Esav Avodah Zarah for? Not allowed to be there. He said she understood these people and she went to be Makar of them. She was like, you know, Rabbi, from Migdal HaEmek, Rabbi Grossman, right? Went to the bars, into the pool halls, right? She knew how to deal with these people. So maybe Esav wanted to go out and do the same thing. He could have been a tzaddik in those places. It doesn't say anywhere that Yaakov wanted to go out and learn Torah. He was attracted to more spiritual places. What's the most spiritual place in the world? It makes Medrash. But he could have been attracted there to, you know, contemplate his navel, or to drink coffee and walk around and talk Lashon Hara too. Right? You could be in a Beis Medrash and not be a tzaddik. But you like that atmosphere, right? I don't like the physical things in the world. I like the, you know, more spiritual, but not because you want to learn Torah. So Yaakov could have been a Rosh in a Beis Medrash, and Esav could have been a tzaddik in a place of Avodah Zarah. Doesn't say what their behavior was. Just says what they were attracted to by their innate character traits, and what their mission in this world was supposed to be, and their characters were given to that. And therefore, when they were kids, nobody took notice of the difference. Of course they're different kids, but they're kids. That's nothing to do with their what they are, right? If they're a tzaddik or a rasha, that's what they were born with. So what's there to take notice of? Once they became bar mitzvah, though, they became in control, and they started using their character traits. Then it became obvious that Esav was using his character traits for the bad, and Yaakov was using it for the good. So that answers that question. And therefore, it wasn't the Yetzer Hara that brought Esav to the base of it. It was just his innate nature. He didn't have a desire to do evil. He just was attracted to that kind of scenario because that was his character makeup.
Yitzchak okay. Didn't
notice this. 1 second. So how about Yitzchak? When Yitzchak noticed this? So the please and thank you and the mention of God's name, I think the Ramban and the Maral already say that Yitzchak saw that as a milah. He understood, here's my little king. I have two children. Both are going to be big tzaddikim. One's going to be a king. The kings are going to come from him. One's going to be a kohen. Okay? Kings don't say please and thank you. They're stern, authoritative people. So Esav is just developing his character. He hasn't yet polished it off. He doesn't know who to say please and thank you to and not. But it's his nature not to be, you know, a cutesy little kid who says please and thank you. And he doesn't mention God's name. Why? This they say. Because he's in the forest all day, in places where you're not allowed to mention God's name because it's not clean. So he's very machmer never to mention God's name for fear that he'll mention it in the wrong place. Yaakov sits in a Beis Medrash. Why shouldn't he mention God's name? So Yisrael didn't see this as a flaw. He saw it just as part of his natural, what's it called, natural character. Now how about the three sins? Those are pretty. But one of them, for sure, you have to say what I'm going to say. So Mamela, you have to kvetch a little bit in the other two too. But one is clear. Esav committed murder. Who did he kill? Nimrod. The arch villain of the world. What do kings do? Kill villains. That's what a king is supposed to be. You couldn't see Yitzchak saying, "My little king, 15 years old, he's already killed the Hitler of the generation, the Ahmadinejad." Right? Somebody would have killed Hitler would not be a murderer, be a hero. So then why did Chazal say he committed murder? Because he didn't do it to rid the world of a tyrant. He did it because he wanted his uniform. If you kill Hitler because you want his uniform, you're a murderer. If you do it to rid the world of a tyrant, you're a tzaddik. Depends on the motive. But Yitzchak gave Esav the benefit of the doubt. If he murdered this Rosh, he probably murdered him because he wanted to rid the world of a tyrant. Why should he suspect that he did it? Don the katzchus. About the other two things, it says that he was immoral. What did he do? He seduced a engaged woman. Engaged means erusin, harayat mekudeshesli. By Jews, after the Torah was given, that is a marriage, and a woman's a married woman. Before the Torah was given, and by goyim after the Torah was given even, that doesn't affect a marriage. That's just like an engagement. You're not married, right? You just promised to be married, right? You've made up to be married, but you're not married. You're not a married woman. Don't you know people, maybe you don't know people, but in any case, that in the name of Kiruv, cross red lines and are makariv people a little bit too closely. Men to women, women to men, or whatever. But they do it for the sake of Kiruv. Okay? They want to makariv these people. So you're just a little too makariv. Couldn't you see Esav even fooling himself or fooling his father and saying, look, these poor women are destined to marry idol worshippers. They're engaged to idol worshippers. If I seduce them and get them away from that, then they'll be my Pelegesh, right, my concubine or whatever, and they'll be married to the son of Yitzchak and the grandson of Avram. I'm saving them from a fate worse than death. So Baal Narmus, there was no prohibition. They weren't married women. He didn't rape them, he seduced them. So couldn't you see him doing this? And Malachim, right, throughout, this is part of, unfortunately, the makeup of kings. Okay, use it for the good, use it for the bad, but sometimes use it for the bad. Starting from Yehuda and Tamar. And he...
Well, bottom line is it's bad.
But it's possible to see it as this is the midah of a king. Not as something bad.
But it was used badly for the good.
What?
It was used inappropriately for the
good. But it's possible to use it for the good. And it's possible to see it. And again, you have a mitzvah to be done the katzchus. So Yitzchak gave the benefit of the doubt. Avodah Zarah, right? There were situations here in Israel after the Holocaust. A lot of children were taken to convents, orphans, and raised as Catholics. And the Gedolim permitted yeshiva boys and girls to disguise themselves to go into these convents and find these children. So Esav said, look, one day I'm going to be the king. I'm going to have to destroy this Avodah Zarah. I'm going to have to go as an undercover agent. So all of these things, again, it's a little contrived. But not the first one. No, the first one's not contrived. The first one, he murdered Nimrod. It's clear. Right? So if that's the case, and they said it as murder, right, the other ones you can explain in a similar way. And Yitzchak gave him... So why did Avram have to die? Because Yitzchak grew up only amongst people who were honest. Everybody else was thrown out of the house. Yishmael, right, Hagar, everybody, right. So he only saw honest people. He didn't imagine that there could be people who were fakers. So he gave Esav the benefit of the doubt. Whereas Rivka and Avram grew up amongst fakers. Her brother was the biggest faker. Her father was a faker. She could smell a rat a mile away. Esav couldn't fool her. So she didn't give him the benefit of the doubt. You only give the benefit of the doubt when there's a doubt. There's no doubt by her. So if that's the case, the last thing is, so why didn't she go to her husband and tell him? Esav's a Rasha. You're making a mistake. He's not using his qualities as a king. He's a Rasha. She was afraid, says Rav Sham Shon Fal Hirsch, that Yitzchak would believe her, and he would not give Esav the bracha. But he wouldn't give Yaakov the bracha either, or he'd give it to him without a full heart. Why? Because Yaakov's my kohen. I'm going to give him the bracha that he should be authoritative, right? Dominion over his brothers, the physical world. What in the world is Yaakov going to do with that bracha? Right? He's a nice guy, but this is not the bracha for a Yaakov. So she had to prove to Yitzchak that since Esav was totally disqualified, both the Kohanim and the Malachim are going to come from Yaakov. That means Yaakov had it in him to act like Esav when it was necessary. And that's exactly what Yitzchak said. Hakol kol Yaakov, but hayodayim, it's possible to be a Yaakov and to have the hands of Esav too. And that's why he gave him the bracha. That's it says, and that's why he gave him the bracha. Because he saw that one of them is going to have both qualities. He said, I want you to show your father that when necessary, you can muster up the qualities of Esav enough to fool him to think you're his Esav. And then he'll give you the bracha. That was the idea. Because otherwise, she would have listened to him and not given Esav the bracha, but he wouldn't have, with a full heart, given Yaakov the bracha.
What?
No. But the costume was just a costume. But he was able, right, Yitzchak was able to see that he had those midos. They was able to bring out those things and to bring out the character of Esav enough to fool him. And therefore he gave him the bracha. He said, you see from that the thing, both things are going to come from one person.